We last 3 weeks we spent on Jesus' prayer for himself, prayer for the disciples, and then ultimately the prayer for us. Because what he said in the third part of his prayer is just as meaningful to each one of us who have the privilege to witness for Christ, to be in what we think is the last days. And so that prayer certainly is very meaningful for us. For those that were at prayer meeting Wednesday night, which I think was two of you, you got a little preview, if you caught it, on our question of why did Jesus have to die? Why did Jesus have to go to the cross? So we will cover that when we get to the crucifixion. Start with chapter 18. We're going to split it up a little bit. You'll see when we come to it why. Somebody read verse 18, verse 1, please.
When he had finished praying, Jesus left with his disciples and crossed the Kidron Valley. On the other side there was an olive grove, and he and his disciples went into it.
Okay. Why do you think John was so descriptive? Anybody have a clue? Why would he say that he crossed the Kidron Valley? On the other side was a little olive grove. The disciples went into it. Well, I'll share with you why. In the Kidron Valley, there was a brook, Kidron Brook. This was at Passover. And what happened was, in the temple, when they sacrificed the lambs, the blood ran, and they had a system that would lead blood to go down and flow into this brook. Now, at the time of Passover, where the Jews came in, who would like to estimate on Passover day, during this time, how many lambs were sacrificed? How many?
30,000.
30,000. 100,000.
30,000
is right. Which one is it?
I'm saying 100,000.
100,000. Higher. 250,000 lambs were sacrificed. Can you imagine how much blood that was? So the blood would flow from the temple. They had a system that would lead it down to this brook in this valley, Kidron Valley. And all commentators pretty well agree that when Jesus went through this, passed over this brook, it was full of blood. Does anybody see the symbolism? The lamb that was to be sacrificed, crossing over the blood of all those that were sacrificed, pointing to him. So I'm pretty sure that's why John put that in here. Most of the Jews who read this would understand what was put in it. Next verse, please. Verse 2.
Now Judas, who betrayed him, knew the place because Jesus had often met there with his disciples. So Judas came to the grove, guiding a detachment of soldiers and some officials from the chief priests and Pharisees. They were carrying torches, lanterns, and weapons.
Okay. John doesn't really go into the description of what Judas did when he got there. Some of the other Bible authors did. I guess to John it wasn't very important. Remember, he had the privilege of writing this about 40 years after anybody had written the four Gospels. So he could pick out and choose what he thought was important. I was doing some research and reading in the Desire of Ages, and I came across something I thought was very interesting. At least it was to me. When Judas came to Jesus, how do we generally think, what did he do to pick so he could point out who Jesus was?
Kissed him.
He did what?
Kissed him.
Kissed him. One kiss? That's what I always kind of thought. But I come across a passage where it said that Judas kissed him many times as a way of affection.
And at that event?
Mm-hmm. I always thought it was one kiss. You know, just kind of kissed him on the cheek. But what he did was he went up as friends would do, and he kissed him several times. Wonder what went through his mind as he did this. You know, you could kind of see him going up there and kissing him once and then getting away or something and saying, well, there it's done. What went through his mind as he must have put his arms on Jesus or around Jesus and kissed him several times? Can you imagine what that must have been like to do that to a person that worked so hard that day? From the time he pointed out to Judas that he was going to be the one to betray him, to washing his feet, and finally in telling Judas at the last minute, well, go do what you have to do, which was another appeal. Judas, I know what you're going to do. Can you imagine him doing that and the look that Jesus must have had on his face of kindness and pity as he was doing that? Judas came with a detachment of soldiers and some officials from the chief priest and the Pharisees. There were two groups of people there that came to arrest Jesus. One was the soldiers from the temple. So these were the chief priest soldiers. There was also Roman, the detachment of soldiers. I went back and looked in the Greek. And when you saw this word detachment, it signified one of three groups. One group would be a group of 600 soldiers. Another group, for the Greek word, would signify 1,000 soldiers. And the third word would signify 200 soldiers. So the minimum they had there, just from the Roman side, was 200 soldiers to come to arrest Jesus. Isn't that amazing? You had minimum of 200 soldiers, could have been as high as 1,000. You have the priest, some of the Pharisees, and then you have the temple soldiers, all to arrest one person. I've got to wonder what in the world went through their mind. One person. They carried torches. That's so they could see. But it also says they carried lanterns, weapons. What do you think they were expecting? Pardon?
Uprising.
Did the Jewish authorities must have convinced the Roman authorities that there was about to be a revolution or something?
Sure. That was part of their, especially the Sanhedrin, which was a political power. Sanhedrin, the only way they were in power was that they kissed up to the Roman army, and so they were the ones pushing that this guy's going to overthrow. They were, you know, so certainly they were expecting an uprising. But they were also expecting to hunt him down. That's why I think John says they had torches, lanterns, weapons. They were expecting somebody to hunt down. Read verse 3. Or 4, actually.
Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen to him, went out and asked them, "Who is it you want?" "Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "I am he," Jesus said. And Judas the traitor was standing there with him. When Jesus said, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground.
Okay, let's stop there. Here they're expecting uprising, somebody hiding, somebody they're going to have to search and find, hunt in the groves, and all of a sudden one man stands up and says, "Who are you looking for?" Did they say, "Son of Man"? Did they say the Messiah? No. In human terms, Jesus from Nazareth. Carpenter's boy. The criminal. And Jesus says, I am He. Made no attempt to hide whatsoever. Then it says that the soldiers fell back and fell down. How do you think that happened? What I used to think.
Do you think they saw the angels?
Yep. Angel came down, Ellen White says, and stepped between Jesus and the mob, the group, and just a glimpse of some of that brightness knocked them to the ground. Now, I think that's important. Why would that be important if that happened? Yes?
Because then we have the same option. I mean, the angels could come down and stand between us and adversity.
Okay.
It may be important, too, that Christ did not use His divinity.
Okay. Both those are correct. Any other reasons? Put yourself that you're in the mob and you're coming to arrest somebody that you think's going to be hard, hiding, criminal, hard person deal. And the guy stands up and says, I'm the one looking for. And then also, all of a sudden, there's this bright object, powerful, knocks you to the ground. Don't you think that would stop and make you think, who in the world is this man? I see it as another appeal to the people for them to stop and think, and can't you realize who this man is? Didn't mean a thing to them. Okay, but we'll see some more appeals before it's over. Judas the traitor was standing there with them. When Jesus said, I am He, they fell back, drew back and fell to the ground. After they recovered, again they said, He asked them, who is it you want? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus says, I've told you that I am He. If you are looking for me, then let these men go. This happened so that the words he had spoken would be fulfilled. I have not lost one of those you gave me. That was in his prayer. What do you gather from that, the fact that he says, I am He, let these guys go? Shouldn't his thoughts have been on himself? Shouldn't his thoughts and his cares have been on what he was ready to go through? When he was on the cross, what was his last request that he made?
Forgive him.
What was the last request he made to humans around him? John, take care of my mother. That's just what Jesus is like. And here he says, I am He. Arrest me. But let these guys go. Then what does good old Peter do? Pardon?
He draws his sword and cuts an ear off.
Yeah. Now, I always thought Peter was kind of he was outspoken, but I always thought he was kind of a coward. We're sure going to see next week. Why did he do that? What do you think he was accomplishing? What do you think was going through his mind?
I think he didn't want to let them take him.
Okay. What do you think he was most concerned about? it probably was more of a knife than a sword. And being a fisherman, they probably had instruments that they would carry. I don't. We think of a sword as a big long sword. It's probably more of a knife.
It says in my note that the Greek word for this word is a short knife or short sword.
Well, it's always good when the Bible agrees with it. I appreciate that fact. That's good. Does it say that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good. It's the only thing that makes sense. I can't see the disciples walking around with a big army sword, you know.
That's what mine says. It says having a small sword unsheathed that struck the slave, the chief priest and cut off his ear. The right one.
So Peter, whether it was a response, whether it was from anger, whether it was a concern for the master, was it a concern maybe that the master is going to set up a kingdom and I've got to defend him? We really don't know. He just struck out and did something. Now, why did Jesus heal the poor man's ear?
No excuses, no charges. Completely innocent. It's like,
yeah.
He can't even blame it on his followers.
That's right. But very good. What else?
Another opportunity.
Absolutely.
Those who could see, who saw.
Absolutely.
Even the man with the ear.
Didn't want to give him an opportunity to accuse him. And don't you think if you were going to capture a guy and somebody cuts off a servant's ear and the man says, pardon me, and puts it back on, wouldn't that get your attention? It's exactly. I mean, how many times has Jesus appealed and showed, even to the disciples, forget the mob, to the disciples, look at all the things they've begun to see in this last week. He's told them who He was. He told them what was going to happen. He shared with Him. They saw Him in Gethsemane. They saw angels come and revive Him and take care of Him. They see angels come and want to protect Him. Ellen White says the angels were begging to come from heaven to protect Jesus. Why wouldn't they? They loved Him. They as a friend. They knew Him. They worshipped Him. And they see an angel come and stagger the crowd. He cuts off a guy's ear, Peter does, and they see it healed instantaneously. Wouldn't that get your attention? We don't know who was or not. But it certainly didn't bother the crowd because they went right ahead and did what they wanted to do with Him.
I wonder what Peter's intention was here. Was he trying to slash the whole man and kill him? It seems strange that he would just decisively decide to remove an ear.
No, I would think that it would make logical sense. He just struck out. The man moved or dodged and he just got part of that ear. I don't think he would. You just set to cut off a man's ear. I don't know what that would accomplish.
John records it was the right.
Yeah, John's he's a detailed person. So
he's a detailed person. If you back up, how come he didn't say that an angel came between? You know what I mean? He points all these things out. He crosses the. The brook, he does this, and all his things, he points out little things. But that one thing he left out, he said they fell back, but he didn't say why they fell back, he just fell back.
Don't know.
It's like he would said that.
He leaves some important stuff out, and you know, and when we in prayer meeting, when we go through the harmony of the Gospels, it's very interesting. Because one of the things we'll deal with is how each of the authors. Same circumstances, how they looked at things so different. Some you'll almost see a contradiction, but it isn't. But they just all saw it different. And so John, who was a detailed person, like I said, you think he would put that, but he didn't. Simon Peter had a sword, drew it, and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. Servant's name was Malchus. Jesus commanded Peter, put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me? Now, what did John leave out? Yeah, putting the ear back on. So he might have assumed, if you're reading his letter, that you've read Matthew, Mark, and Luke. So he doesn't go into the details of, he just probably assumes you know that story. So, shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me? Again, that's an appeal to the disciples. Now, what did the disciples do after all of this? Here they see Jesus stand up, tells them who he is, performs this miracle, tells the disciples, Peter, don't put your sword away. I've got to drink of this cup. Appeals to them. How do the disciples handle all this? John doesn't tell us, but the other ones do. Pardon? What did you say? Can't hear you.
It's scattered.
Scattered. Okay, I thought Sue was talking. Yeah, they take off. Now, guess who was the ringleader who said, let's get out of here?
Peter.
Yeah. So, Peter here, he wants to take a sword, he wants to swipe at Malchus, the servant. Jesus heals him. And then Peter probably comes to his senses. Maybe you're a doctor. Maybe it's that rush of adrenaline or something. And all of a sudden then he says, hey, I think it'd be very prudent if we get out of here. What good friends. Now next week, we're going to take Peter's denial, and we're going to take the last chapter of John when Jesus said to Peter, feed my sheep. How many times did Peter deny?
Three.
And how many times did Jesus ask Peter, do you love me, Peter?
Three.
We're going to combine those three, tells two stories, and you'll see such a beautiful picture of God, of what Jesus was like. Because each one of those answers that Peter gave was a much different answer, even though it was the same quote words, you know I love you. It was completely three different answers, and you're going to see how Christ worked with Peter, and it's very, very beautiful. That's next week. All right, Jesus goes to Annas. Somebody read verse 12. He's arrested. Disciples take off. He's alone by himself. And now in the middle of the night, they take him to Annas. Somebody read verse 12 till I stop you.
So the Roman cohort and the commander and the officer of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him and led him to Annas first. For he was father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. Now Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jews that it was expedient for one man to die on behalf of the people.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Caiaphas, he's the one. Remember, he went before the Sanhedrin and Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea was saying, well, let's not be quite so quick to convict this guy. Let's give him a chance for him to speak to us. Let's see what his side of the story is. And Caiaphas said, don't really care what it is. Man, sometimes you got to kill one for the good of the country. And so that's what he pointed out. Now, Annas was a very interesting character. Eidersheim, who wrote the definitive book about the Jews were like during the time of Christ, states that Annas was the most powerful for about 10 years of any of the priests in Jerusalem. He had power among the Romans, and he had power among the Jews. And three of his sons became high priest, and his son-in-law became the fourth high priest. Now, there's a reason they took him to Annas first. And I thought it was kind of interesting. Hope you find it interesting. We have to go back. Why did Jesus cleanse the temple?
When he chased out the money changers?
Yes. Yeah. Here's what was happening. Remember, lots of the Jews came from all around to Jerusalem. If you had money, you brought a lamb. If you were poor, you brought two doves. Now, the lamb and the doves were supposed to be what?
They were supposed to
be perfect. Perfect. No blemishes. Well, the Jews, who did such a good job with the law, guess what they had at the entrance of the temple gates before you could go into the temple? They had examiners. And so when you brought your little lamb, 250,000 of them, or you brought your turtle dove, or doves, I don't know if they're turtle doves or not, but I don't know what the difference is. Not a bird man. But you brought your birds, they would examine them. And guess what they would find?
They would find
the
flaws.
Huh, this one doesn't pass mustard. So, now you just came from the holy city of Keene to Arlington. Well, are you going to go back to Keene and get another pair of doves? So what was left to do? You'd have to buy them. And guess what the price was? 15 times what the normal price was. Now, if you didn't offer them, where was your salvation? In the dumpster. So, if they were worth a dollar, you had to shell out $15. I don't know what lambs were, guess about the same. So, here they were, taking advantage of the people. They'd say, now go over here to booth 43, and they'll sell you two doves, or they'll sell you a lamb. And so they had no other choice. I don't know what they did with them. Probably ate them. Well, I don't know that. I just soon believe they ate them. Just sidetracking. I don't know. They probably recycled them. That would make sense. Now, Jesus come along and drove out the money changers. Guess who the CEO was? Of the, I'm sorry you have a blemish on your little bird or lamb. Would anybody like to guess who the CEO was? Annas. Remember, most powerful man, high priests. Three of his sons were high priests, son-in-law, high priest. He was the one that set this up. Now, here comes Jesus. Runs them out. Think he was happy? No. So the very first person they take him to is Annas. Because, number one, he wants revenge. How dare you mess up. And number two, it was important to get on record when they approached the Romans, that the Jews had no regard for this man. And they were able to say to the Romans eventually, well, we took him to Annas right off the bat to see. And Annas says, man, this is a bad dude. But the story behind it was, he was the one that set up this money game. And that's why they brought him to Jesus, because they knew exactly what would happen. Let's skip the part of Peter, because we're going to come down to it next week. Meanwhile, Peter's over here saying, who? Jesus who? But we'll come back to that. Skip down to verse 19. Somebody read 19.
Meanwhile, the high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching.
Okay, keep going.
I have spoken openly to the world, Jesus replied. I always taught in the synagogues or at the temple where all the Jews come together. I said nothing in secret.
Okay, let's stop. Okay, go ahead. The next one's important.
Why question me?
Okay. So they're starting to talk, question him. Well, why did you do this? What have you said? And he says, what are you talking about? I've always taught in the temple. I've always taught open. I have no secrets. Why are you asking me this? Does anybody have an insight on why he's asked that question? Well, I'll tell you. When they brought him to Annas, who was a Jew, they were not supposed to ask any questions that would be incriminating. It would be kind of like the Fifth Amendment here. They were not supposed to ask him incriminating questions. They were only supposed to listen to what he had to say without really digging in to things that would incriminate him or why did you do this. So they were totally out of line with their questioning right off the bat. And Jesus certainly points this out by simply saying, why are you asking me these questions? What he was saying to everybody that could hear and involved is, this is illegal. This isn't supposed to be this way. Here again, showing how they were out to get him no matter what happened. It says, I spoke openly to the world. I've always taught in synagogues or at the temple where all the Jews come together. I've said nothing in secret. Why question me? Are those who heard me? Surely they know what I've said. So he's saying, if you're implying that I've said anything against the Roman government, and that's what they were hoping they would get out of him, because they could go to the Romans, he says, why are you questioning me? By law, you're not supposed to ask these questions. By law, ask anybody around that's heard me in the temple or the synagogue and ask them what I've said. But they wasn't after justice. When one of the fish, when Jesus said that, well, somebody read 22.
When Jesus said this, one of the officials nearby struck him in the face. Is this the way you answer the high priest? He demanded. If I said something wrong, Jesus replied, testify as to what is wrong. But if I spoke the truth, why did you strike me? Then Annas sent him, still bound, to Caiaphas, the high priest.
Okay. When Jesus said one of the officials struck him in the face, Jesus said, if I've said anything wrong, testify as to what is wrong. But I spoke the truth. Why did you strike me? What's the answer? What did they say? Didn't have an answer. Didn't have one. What is important as we look at tonight, and next week we're going to do Peter, which is a little break on this. Then we're going to go back to Pilate. And then we're going to go to the crucifixion. What is important is that the entire universe was watching this. Why is that important?
This would reveal Jesus' love, and it's also
reveals Satan's evil character.
Yep. Got to set the table. Must remember there's two powers working here. Satan's accusation from the beginning of time in heaven was that God was unfair, that God was arbitrary, and that you better worship Him, obey Him, or He will kill you. This is the essence of the great controversy. What is the character of God? What is God like? So we're going to see in the next few weeks, there's two powers working here on Thursday night and Friday morning. One of them is the devil. He was in the Garden of Gethsemane saying to Jesus, "Give up. Nobody cares. Nobody's worth it. Look at your three best friends. They're sound asleep. If you die, you won't be resurrected." Can you imagine as the universe watched and they saw a mob of soldiers from 200 to 600 to 1,000, temple guards who were there to protect God's sanctuary on earth. They saw priests who were there to represent to the Jewish people what God was like. They saw the Pharisees who were there to teach what God was like. The universe begins to watch as they come and they arrest Jesus, and look how calm He is. Look how His thoughts are upon the disciples. Don't take them. Look how the disciples looked after Him. Off they went. And then they watched the person that they had worshipped for eternity in heaven be tied, drugged, taken to Annas, who they knew what he was like. They had seen all of this. And they see him ask the question, and the Creator of the universe slapped. And they watched how Jesus responded. Who was in that crowd that night at Annas? One of the things that Mel Gibson got correct. He was right there. They knew Satan, Lucifer, they knew him well. They knew Jesus, they knew him well. And for 4,000 years, the angels in heaven, as well as the universe, as they watched this play out, still were not totally convinced that God was 100% right and Lucifer 100% wrong. It's unbelievable, isn't it? They were not totally convinced. But just think, as they watched that soldier slap the Creator of this world, the Jesus they knew, the Jesus they worshipped. Well, He didn't get mad. He didn't get angry. He just says, "Why are you doing this? when I tell you the truth. And they see Satan. Father in heaven, we're told by my favorite Bible commentator also, that we would do well to spend an hour a day on the life of Christ, especially the last day events. No wonder we're told that. How our hearts have to be touched as we see that mob coming, as we see you just stand up and say, "Who are you looking for? I am He." And how tenderly you must have looked at that poor servant, ear bleeding, as you put that ear back on. How it must have hurt as the universe had to watch a common soldier, one that you had created, slap you, the Creator, in the face. You simply said, "I'm telling the truth." Father, help us see that picture every day of You. See the picture of Your love. Because in the midst of all of this, You stopped and took care of one poor servant. In the midst of all that's going on, You stop and take care of us. Thank You. Amen.